One afternoon, just after Provener, the bell team began to ring changes. I assumed at first that it was Eliger again, for by that time, five had joined the Adharians, three the New Circle, and one the reformed Old Fonians. But some deep part of my brain nagged me with the sense that these were changes I had not heard before. Once more I set down my pen, wishing I'd been given this penance in less interesting times, and sat where I could watch the ropes. Within a few minutes I knew for certain that this was not Eliger. My chest clenched up for a few moments as I worried that it was Anathem. It was over, though, before I could make sense of it. So I sat motionless for half an hour listening to the knaves fill up. It was a big crowd. All of the Avowed and all of the Maths had stopped whatever they had been doing and come here. They were all talking. They sounded excited. I couldn't make out a word, but I sensed from their tone that something momentous was about to happen. In spite of my fears, I slowly convinced myself it could not be Anathem. People would not be talking so much if they had gathered to watch one of their number be thrown back. The service began. There was no music. I could make out the primate speaking familiar phrases in Old Orth, a formal summoning of the consent. Then he switched to New Orth and read out some formula that, by its nature, had to have been written around the time of the reconstitution. At the end of it, he called out distinctly,
"Voco fra Paphlagon of the Centenarian Chapter of the Order of Saint Edhar."
So this was the Ought of Voco. It was only the third one I'd ever heard. The first two had occurred when I'd been about 10 years old. As I absorbed that, a gasp and then a deep moan welled up from the floor of the chancel. The gasp, I reckoned, from most of the Avowed, and the moan from the Hundreders, who were losing their brother forever. And now I did something crazy, but I knew I could get away with it. I stepped over the threshold of my cell. I crossed the walkway and looked over the railing. Only three people were in the chancel: Statho in his purple robes, and Varix and O'Nally, identifiable by their hats. The rest of the place, hidden behind the screens, was in an uproar that had stopped the Ought. I'd only meant to peek over the rail for an instant so that I could see what was going on, but I had not been struck by lightning. No alarm had sounded. No one was up here. They couldn't possibly be here, I realized, because Voco had rung, and everyone had to gather in the minster for that. Had to, because there was no way of knowing in advance whose name would be called. Come to think of it, I was probably supposed to be down there. Voco must be one of the few exceptions to the rule that someone like me must remain in his cell. Then why hadn't the Warden Regulant's staff come and rousted me? It had probably been an oversight, I reckoned. They didn't have procedures for this. If they were like me, they hadn't even recognized the changes. They hadn't realized it was Voco until it had started, and then it had been too late for them to come up and fetch me. They were stuck down there until it was over. They were stuck down there until it was over. I was free to move about, at least for a little while, as long as I was back in my cell when the Warden Regulant and her staff trudged back up here. Whereupon I'd be in trouble anyway for having ignored Voco. So why not get in trouble for something that people would be talking about in the refectory 50 years from now? All of those exercises I'd been doing were going to pay off. I tore around the walkway, took the stairs up through the Fendant Court, three at a time, and so came into the lower reaches of the Chronochasm. Here I had to move with greater care so as not to clatter and bang on the metal stairs, but by the same token I had a clear view down so I could keep track of what was going on. Nothing had changed that I could see, but a new sound was rising up the well, the hymn of mourning and farewell, addressed by the Hundreders to their departing brother. This had taken a little while to get underway. No one had it memorized. They'd had to rummage for rarely used hymnals and page through them looking for the right bit. Then it took them a minute to get the hang of it, for this was a 5-part harmony. By the time the hymn really fell together and began to work, I was halfway to the Starhenge, clambering up behind the dials of the clock, trying to stay collected, trying to move as Leo would, and not let the end of my bolt get caught between gears. The song of mourning and farewell was really hair-raising, even more emotional somehow than what we sang at funerals. Of course, I had not the faintest idea who Fra Paflagon was, what he was like, or what he studied, but those who were singing did, and part of the power of this music was that it made me feel what they felt. And, given that Fra Paflagon and I were both striking out alone for unknown territory, perhaps I felt a little of what he felt. The main floor of the Starhenge was just above my head now. I'd come up against the inward curve of the vault that spanned the top of the Presidium and supported all that rested on its top. A few shafts penetrated the stonework, delivering power to the polar drives. A stair spiraled around the largest of these. I ran to the top of it and rested my hand on a door latch. Before passing through, I looked down to check the progress of the Ott. The door through the centenarian's screen had been opened. Fra Paflagon stepped out into the middle and stood there alone. The door closed behind him.